Welcome to Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donny Bergstrom.
We have a great show for you this week. We're going to start off by answering some questions from Instagram before covering a couple headlines from this week, including the new Why Not Wednesdays and a new library location in Fresno. Then we're going to go to our in-depth story this week, which is about Measure C and the state of public transportation and roads. And then we'll close with what we're loving this week.
Today on the pod, we have Greg Weaver, who is Fresnoland's environmental reporter. Greg, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
We received a number of questions from Instagram. We love questions from Instagram. The first one was, what's going on with the bridge near Fresno City? Donnie, Greg, what's going on with that?
Yeah, so this, if you drive by Blackstone and McKinley, you'll notice I drive by that intersection all the time. There are not one, but two places at the intersection where the train tracks, the BNSF train tracks, cross. And so it creates sort of a traffic nightmare. It's also a safety issue for a lot of pedestrians and people walking to Fresno City. There was a student that was killed by a crossing train about a decade ago or so. So it's been a known issue for a long time. And way back two decades ago, there was a plan that was developed to, because of a lot of the safety issues around cars and trains, and also a lot of the air quality issues that result with cars having to stand at the train tracks, trains going through these places, creating more emissions. There was a plan created to underground roads underneath all of the train tracks under the BNSF line. The BNSF line is like the one that goes through downtown and then it stays on the west side of the city, northwest part of the city. So anyways, it took a really long time for that plan to get implemented, but now it finally is, and that's what they're doing. They're basically going to tunnel McKinley underneath the BNSF tracks, and same for Blackstone, so that you don't have to sit at the train tracks anymore.
What's the timeline on this? Do we have a sense of a timeline?
There is a timeline, but I did not look it up.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
It's a big project. This thing's been an issue for, you can probably date it back to the 50s. Remember, Blackstone used to be Highway 41.
Yeah.
And so can you imagine driving on a highway and then you got to stop for a train? And this is what Fresno residents used to deal with before 41 was just what it is today as a fully separated thoroughfare highway. But yeah, so they're going to have to build up, they're going to have to pave underneath.
It's an $80 million project.
Yeah. It was a custom slot in the spending plan. Donnie mentioned it, but I guess I'll say a little more for Measure C, which we're going to obviously talk about later. But yeah, it's a whole engineering project that has engineers across the state working on it.
Another question we received is, how do we reform downtown Fresno's zoning laws to make it better for urbanization? And this will have Donnie put on her urban planner hat. How do we do that?
I love this question because it gives me a chance to remind people that may not realize that while the rest of California chirps on about how they have the worst zoning laws and how zoning is the reason that they can't build anything nice, we don't have that problem in Fresno, downtown at least. Our downtown zoning code actually allows for very urbanist built environment, very tall buildings. There's very few height restrictions, very few density requirements in downtown Fresno. And if you talk to any city planner that works for the city, that doesn't work for the city, they'll tell you that. The issue with downtown not urbanizing is a financing issue. The cost that it takes to build a 5-story building, a 7-story building downtown, it just can't be justified by most developers compared to the rents that they can command to fill those buildings. In order for anyone to be able to build a 5, 7, 10-story building downtown, you're going to have to build very luxury, high-end apartments in order to command the rents that you could do to make that kind of project work. And that's why we can't have nice things downtown.
Mm. Or I might add, get like tax credits from the federal HUD, the housing.
Yes.
Yeah, that's an opportunity zone, correct? So there is those Trump opportunity zone tax credits that could be used and have been used, right?
Yeah, and Bitwise actually used some of those opportunity zone credits to rehabilitate some of their buildings downtown. So yes, tax credits do exist. There's a lot of tax credits in particular to build affordable housing.
Yeah.
The low-income housing tax credit.
So in other words, the laws aren't our concern. It's really financing and then political.
It's financing, it's politics, it's a question of political will. It's a question of developer capacity. We don't have a lot of developers in Fresno who, quite frankly, know how to effectively and efficiently build high-density buildings. The building codes are really different if you build a stainless steel building compared to a wood frame construction building. And after you go, I think it's above 4 stories or 5 stories, you have to build in steel. You have to have elevators. It's an entirely different building code, and most developers in Fresno aren't building that sort of product.
And we're more focused on 2 to 3 story apartment buildings that are
And look at the Granville urban projects that were built downtown. Those are all 2-3 story max. Yeah. They're wood frame construction. Yeah. They don't have elevators. They're basically a modified townhome. It's a product that doesn't have to bend to a different type of building code as much in a way that a 5-7 story building would.
The one thing I'll add about this is that building in downtown and how to solve that problem, how to incentivize it. We've been talking about this since Chuck Berry, the rock singer, guy who invented rock, was still performing in the 50s. But we got all these other high rises, just Security Bank, right?
Yeah.
What's crazy is all of that was built within a 5 to 7 year period. This stuff happened before. It's possible, but some people know, some nerds will know, we had hydroelectric powered light rail lines that powered all of these, the movement of people to and from their houses to Fulton Corridor, which is where people did their shopping and why it became such an attractive place to build high rises like that for offices and retail and whatever. So yeah, transit's a big issue.
It's
in
huge.
This equation, which we'll talk about later.
Yeah.
Thank you, everyone who submitted questions. We love questions. If you're interested in submitting them, we'll solicit them once a week through Instagram stories. So make sure you follow Fresnoland's Instagram and submit questions. We love to answer them, so keep sending them. Before we get into the meat of today's conversation, we're going to cover a few headlines, including a proposal to maybe solve the conflict over Art Hop. Donnie, what has the city proposed?
So the city rolled out this past week, and by when I say the city, Mayor Dyer, along with City Councilmember Miguel Arias, who has been leading the charge in modifying what we know or have known as art. This new event will take place on the third Wednesday of the month, making sure to not be in the same week as Art Hop. It's going to debut on September 18th. It's called Why Not Wednesday? And the Downtown Fresno Partnership was also there to roll out this new event. It's meant to be focused on street vendors. It's called a street fair. Vendors are expected to have a free process to apply to become a vendor. They do have to apply with the city in order to be able to sell their goods and services at the street fair. But it's meant to give vendors a free and legal way of having this, while also the city providing public safety, police officers, sanitation workers to the event. And the Wednesday piece, why is it on Wednesdays? Because that's when we have an abundance of police officers working overtime.
What do you guys think of the name? Why not Wednesdays?
I'm not usually a proponent of naming contests or the city spending a lot of money on expensive consultants to do things that seem pretty basic.
But yes, here they should have outsourced some marketing. I've seen quite a few alternative names on Instagram, including We Don't Want This Wednesday and Whack-Ass Wednesdays. Both of those don't seem like good alternatives, but it is a sign that maybe public participation would be helpful.
I actually think it's a lovely name.
Oh, you like Why Not Wednesdays? It feels defensive to me, like naming something because you're in a posture of defense. Like, why not Wednesdays?
Yeah, I think it's true to the place, what Fresno is. I think that's the core ethic that it captures. They split this event in two, and with Fresno, what is what you get? You drive in, it shows you everything you need to see. And
the only problem with it, I would say, is that it doesn't really tell you what it is.
Well, the thing,
Art Hop tells you what it is.
The thing
why
is,
not Wednesdays? What
the
does
reason
it tell
why
you?
I like it is because it announces its whole history to you. It's what the heck? Let's split it in two.
Yeah.
So this new event will take place on the third Wednesday of the month, making sure to not be in the same week as Art Hop. It's going to debut on September 18th.
Another story this week is about the developments regarding an expansion or relocation of a library in Fresno County. The Politi branch, which had a borderline microscopic space that it was using before, is relocating to a bigger space. The space is going to move from about a 5,000 square foot building to a 21,000 square foot building that used to be a Rite Aid. Probably the most interesting thing I read in the story, though, was the cost per month to rent this space. According to the article that Fresno Land put out on this, it's going to be $47,383 per month, which actually is going to increase annually by 3%, and the county will be paying $600,000 to rent the library's location, which feels expensive to me.
So Jordan, as a librarian, how are you feeling? Is 21,000 square feet, how is that going to feel to people?
I think people like space, right? If you're in a library, you like space to be able to roam. It's more space for bookshelves. It's more space for children's sections. You go to a lot of libraries that are cramped spaces and you don't linger as long. We look at foot traffic based on square footage. And the bigger the space, the more likely people are going to wander between the shelves. And so I think it's a great thing for the city. Now, whether the financial aspect of it makes sense, I don't know. But in terms of what it will do for patrons of the library, I think it's a great thing.
What about modifying a former Rite Aid?
I have not. So I'll full disclosure, I've not been the biggest fan of the Fig Garden space that they retrofitted to become a library. It's in a strip mall. I think it's on Bullard and Marx, I think. Is that right?
Yeah.
Bullard and Marx, yeah.
In high school, I went to that place every night to study. It's my home base.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So it's fine, but it's hard to make a space feel comfortable when it's a former like strip mall department store. You got linoleum floors, the sound travels. My favorite branch in Fresno is Woodward because of the design, because of the square footage they have, because of the space,
the thing
because
of the carpet. The thing was designed by Frank Lloyd Wright's protege.
It's a beautiful building.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
It's a beautiful building, and the interior is so comfortable. Lots of groups use it. I went to a CMAC focus group there, and they use the kind of the conference room area. It's a wonderful space, but I think aesthetics and design are really important in a library to make it functional.
I certainly feel that way. The closest library that I go to is also in a strip mall, and I go there because it's the closest library, but I would say it's not something that I feel a strong sense of lingering. But when I visit other cities, the library is almost always on the top of my list, and in most other major cities in the U.S. and certainly abroad, the library is usually like an architectural jewel.
And this could be something, so libraries are going through a lot of changes. The budget cuts to social services have made them more focused on, like, San Francisco's public library employs social workers. We're loaning out different kinds of materials. Libraries are changing. One of the big things that's changing in libraries is interlibrary loan. A lot of people just request books, go into the library, grab the requested book, and leave.
Yeah.
And so they become kind of way stations for people just to quickly come in, quickly go out. And then a lot of the people that do spend time in there are people that need internet, they need access to a computer, they want to hang out because it's hot outside and they might be homeless. So libraries are serving two clienteles that are, there's becoming a bit of a chasm between it. You don't really see, I mean, you do see sometimes, but not as much, people just wandering the stacks and looking through. And I think by designing something that's beautiful, that could encourage them to stay put. Because I really do think one of the best things you can do is just wander through a stack of books and find something you didn't expect to find. And find a great book that you didn't know about before, take it home, read it. I think that's one of the best things about libraries.
It's literally the dream, a dream day for me.
All right, the meat of today's podcast is a discussion about Measure C. It's been something that's been in the news. It was in the news a while ago in 2022 when the renewal vote did not pass. And it's in the news again. Donnie, why is it in the news again?
So we have Greg here to go into the weeds. And Greg, I'll let you recount why it was in the news. And then we're going to go into a bit of history. And for those of you who are like, oh, this sounds so nerdy and boring, let me just tell you first that transportation and understanding transportation money and funding is the key that unlocks so many other ways of understanding how Fresno grows and develops. So I strongly encourage you to stay for this conversation. Okay, Greg, what happened?
So Measure C is run by a board of transportation leaders and rural and urban leaders. For example, Jerry Dyer's on the board. And they control about, it's over $100 million a year in transportation funding. It goes to public transit, highways, rotor paving. Even if you want a new sidewalk in your neighborhood, Measure C will probably pay for a portion of that. So this is a really important board. And they were supposed to take a vote on getting going on the next 30 years of Measure C. It's a really important vote that the board is supposed to provide direction for the spending plan and to the director, and he gets the ball rolling. And it got halted in the middle of the vote because the majority of the board members weren't there. And so it's very rare to see this kind of organized, professional board just get halted like this. I you don't remember any time where the city council lost quorum suddenly like that, right?
Well, no, so this is not normal.
Yeah, yeah, not normal.
So your story...
So that gets us into the history of what's going on here.
Yeah.
It wasn't random.
The story that you wrote this last week starts there with there was this meeting. They were supposed to give direction to the new director of Fresno County Transportation Agency about how we might build the blueprint for the next version of Measure C, because the plan right now is to put it on the ballot in 2026, correct?
Yeah.
And so there wasn't a quorum. Let's rewind back a little bit. So there was an attempt to put a next version of Measure C on the ballot in 2022. We reported pretty extensively on that. Why did it fail at the ballot box?
And so the way these sales tax measures work is if there's any opposition, it will not pass. This is something that happened in LA in 2012. They had a multi-billion dollar transportation spending plan. They couldn't get a consensus built, and opposition killed the renewal. And so this is what happened in 2022 in Fresno County. The plan spent the majority of its fund on road repaving projects because our roads have fallen apart in a way that is unrivaled in the state of California. And in order to fund that, all this road repaving, a lot of other priorities had to get cut, major priorities, ones that you would think over the next 30 years as we try and deal with climate change or do transit-oriented development, build more densely, we would want to fund public transit. And a lot of people got organized around opposing this issue. There's a group of community groups in Fresno that have done kind of climate change plans like Leadership Council and Building Healthy Communities. And then also the unions and the Fresno Unified Teachers Union got involved as well. Unions wanted to see bigger, more ambitious projects that could employ the carpenters and the steel workers and all these sorts of workers. And then the Fresno Unified didn't like it, the union didn't like it because in order to get all that money into the road repaving projects, they actually cut building sidewalks for safe routes to school. So it's the reason why it failed is because it was so singularly focused on this that a lot of other people felt that their priorities weren't getting funded. And what's happened next has to do with how do you forge a new consensus on how to go forward with the next 30 years of the spending plan.
And it's not, there's lots of polling that's been done, and a lot of polling shows that no one likes to drive on potholes. It ruins your car. It's just a huge hassle. Messes with your gas mileage and all of that. At the same time, there's this question about who should pay for the damage to the roads. And so could you talk a little bit more about some of the studies that have been produced about this?
Yeah. So I think the first way of thinking about this is our transportation infrastructure is extremely complicated and it can get funded in a variety of ways. And sales tax revenues are the only ones that could be. For example, we used to build our highways through gas tax revenues up until the mid-70s. It has to do with inflation and how the cost of labor exceeded the growth rate for gas tax revenues. But the long story short is the state couldn't build highways with gas tax revenues. So we created Measure C in the first place to build the highways to make up for that funding shortfall. And so in these situations where you have a new problem emerge, in the 70s we couldn't build highways like the way we wanted to, or now we have a $2 billion, $3 billion road maintenance funding shortfall, you got to get creative with how these issues get funded. And so what was decided in the 22 spending plan in 2022 that just couldn't get the political support it needed was through the sales tax measure. And the question that I tried to explore in this reporting is how have other people tried to deal with how to fund our road infrastructure? And there's some work out at San Jose State that has done a history of how different needs have gotten funded with cars, with roads, with highways, with public transit. And one way in which transportation leaders have started to think about something like road maintenance is as like a utility fee, like public utilities. PG&E has a whole system to set up how users pay bills that help. Everybody knows right now about wildfire mitigation with PG&E and these sort of upkeeps on a massive infrastructure. People are saying we should think about our road infrastructure in the exact same way through user fees on roads.
And I can't imagine that's going to be popular.
The politics on it are actually more interesting than you would think about just a knee-jerk reaction against increased taxes. Of course, that's always the first way to think about this. But the politics of road maintenance are quite interesting because the responsibility on who causes a lot of this damage is so lopsided. It's not residents. The big transportation planning board in Fresno County. It's called the Council of Governments. They issued a report in, I believe, 2022, talking about how the way roads work, exponentially more damage gets caused by heavy-duty trucks versus passenger
vehicles. And we've seen
vehicles.
A lot of growth of these warehouses from Visalia to Merced. They're popping up along the 99 and using various thoroughfares that are then getting damaged.
When you see one of those cars, especially on a rural road, that it is causing the equivalent damage of up to 6,000 passenger vehicles. Once you start thinking about compounding that over many millions of truck trips every day, that's a very serious problem when you think about road maintenance. And this is what, when you think about user fees with roads being implemented, those finding a nexus between road damage and kind of funding for that. This is what people are thinking about.
Have people talked about some of these heavy industries contributing to road repair?
At the Fresno level, no. I would say at best it's at its very early stages. I think that this is something that will likely be talked about in the next few years as people try and come to an understanding of we have all these needs. We need to find a way to get funding for them.
Yeah. Because you're balancing. You're balancing, and I can already predict a conversation I would have where, you know, you put some kind of tax or some kind of fine, or not tax, fine. Having heavy industry or ag contribute, I could hear the framing be something along the lines of that will disincentivize economic development in the area because you're penalizing them for operating, essentially.
Here's the interesting thing. This debate has happened before, and it worked in Fresno County. So in 2022, Measure C failed, right? We've established this. It actually failed 20 years before that in 2002, and it was a very highway-dominated spending plan. They wanted to expand Highway 41 all through the city of Fresno to 8 lanes. It had a huge amount of funding for highway expansions. There were new highway belts in Clovis, just stuff that were basically put into the scrap heap of history with the spending plan that did pass in 2006, 4 years later. And so what happened is highway funding got cut back in 2006. Developers still wanted highway projects to get built, so they came up with a developer fee that ended up getting used to build highway expansions.
And this is residential development that you're referring to, not heavy industry.
No, industrial has to also pay into this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The RTMF, if you will.
Yes.
The Regional Transportation Mitigation Fee for the nerds out there.
So this has happened before, is all I'm saying is that we can imagine a reality where this gets done.
And it's developer impact fees as a means to help pay for some of these effects is a commonly used mechanism throughout California. It's a needed mechanism given that Prop 13 keeps property taxes at relatively low levels, and so cities can't use property taxes. And especially it helps you target the fee to the sort of source of the damage a lot better than like a general sales tax would. But I think something else that's really interesting to talk about is, and you mentioned in your reporting, is that while we're still having these conversations around road maintenance and that being the dominant priority at the moment of a lot of politicians, certainly in Fresno to solve, and it's something that's important to residents too. Yeah. I don't want to understate that, but a lot of other large cities in California are using their sales taxes to construct major transportation systems. LA is building out yet another light rail line. San Diego has their light rail system. San Jose, Sacramento, San Francisco. And when are we going to have our light rail conversation in Fresno? Is that ever going to happen? Has that come up in these conversations?
I'm sadly bearish on that kind of conversation. I maybe that's just a me being pessimistic, but I'm bearish. I'm not bullish on that.
I think I mentioned earlier about trying to develop downtown as a conversation that was going around with Chuck Berry. I guess what I was trying to say is that trying to revitalize downtown is literally older than rock and roll.
True.
I think if it's ever going to happen, there's a lot of other hard challenges facing the state that the city is going to have to face one way or another. And it comes down to dealing with climate change and how people get around to make a living, and how exactly we make our neighborhoods livable. Another major problem facing the city is the lack of parks. And one of the major reasons why is people are spread out so thinly, we didn't have the money to build these sort of parks, these amenities that other major cities have. And concentrating people finding a way to make it economical to concentrate people in key areas that you want to build at is one of the major problems of urbanism, of building a city, of planning a city. And like the way that has happened time and time again is to make people have easy ways to go back and forth to wherever they need to go from where you're building. And that's been done with public transit, with rail lines, bus lines. We don't have to do necessarily light rail line. No. Bus rapid transit system with 5-minute lead times is an extraordinarily effective.
When I lived in San Francisco, some of the kind of east-west lines that I would take from Outer Sunset or Outer Richmond to get towards downtown, because I worked off Market Street in the Castro. I would jump on, it would skip a few stops, and I'd get there pretty rapidly, in the same way that if I took the Muni from Outer San Francisco to go in towards Market Street as well, it'd be similar in terms of speed and time.
And if you talk to, I had a really interesting conversation with a transportation planner and professor at Fresno State, Dr. Ali Tafiq, a couple of months ago about this conundrum around using Measure C as a vehicle to fund like a much more robust public transportation system. And his sort of question back to me is, but is our built environment really set up for public transit? We have suburbs that make it, we don't build walkable neighborhoods in Fresno.
Yeah, we need concentration. We need concentration to make it make sense.
Yeah. I was recently in London and I was stunned. There's a park practically around every corner, and these massive parks are just full of people everywhere you look. And it's just, we have places like Roding Park that don't remotely have the kind of density surrounding them to, and also the amount of maintenance and attention to them needed to really make them sort of crown jewels of our city. And I think until we address the density problem in the way that our built environment is, it's going to be hard to get these other amenities around public transportation.
I think the other tension for anybody who just remotely understands what's going on in Fresno is, the same time we're talking about whether or not we can get public transit or rail built, the America's first high-speed rail station is getting built in downtown. I think the idea is that there's state and federal kind of powers with obviously much bigger funding sources than we have, who are trying to make things happen that are maybe different than the way the city has historically developed. And so how do you come up with a different vision for the city building off of that? I think that's a big tension in any discussion we have about Measure C. I think if for readers who are going to be following what I'm going to be reporting on this issue, that's something to keep in mind.
We close every podcast with our favorite segment, which is what we're loving this week. Greg, what are you loving this week?
I think the big thing I'm enjoying right now is watching Aaron Judge hit. This guy went to Fresno State, became a professional baseball player in Fresno, and he's having, if you follow baseball, this guy right now is having a season that has only been bested by two or three other players in kind of MLB history.
Is that hits, home runs, RBIs, is it all the above?
Yeah, I'm looking at like overall performance.
Okay.
He beat the American League home run record 2 years ago, and nobody thought that could have been topped. That record had been set, I think, in 1961 by Roger Maris, this lodestar for baseball, 61 home runs or 60 home runs. And nobody thought he could top that season. And this year, he's actually having an even better season. So if you went down MLB history, it's Babe Ruth, Ted Williams, and Barry Bonds who've had better hitting seasons than Aaron Judge. So Fresno baseball punches way, way above its weight. When I was in high school, Buchanan High, they won a national championship in 2016. They also won another one in 2011.
What makes Fresno baseball so good? What is it about Fresno?
It's something really to be prideful about. In the 1950s, Fresno High was the team to beat. And actually, USA Today, about 10 years ago, put together, I don't know who compiles these sorts of lists, but what was the greatest high school baseball team of all time? And it was a mid-50s Fresno High baseball team. It had Seaver. It had
Tom Seaver.
Tom, yeah. I think it had three or four pro ball players on there. Bullard High in like the 80s, I think they won a few national championships. Fresno baseball produced probably one of the two or three greatest hitters of all time, I think we can say with Aaron Judge now.
What do you think about the pitch clock?
You know what? It bothered me at first. I don't like a whole lot of change when it comes to these sorts of things.
Baseball is inherently a conservative sport in some ways, right?
I just love the pace. You just sit down and there's a writer I love, you know, Don DeLillo. When the pandemic, when baseball came back, he's got to be in his 80s now. He's been writing since the 60s or 70s. I can't remember if it was a short story or an essay just about baseball being back. He just decided, one of the great prose stylists in American history decided to write about the pace of baseball. So yeah, I love that about the game. To be honest though, it's put into the background now with the pitch clock. I'm just more so overwhelmed by the sheer talent of the MLB right now.
I think the pitch clock is beneficial for my credit card statements because I won't go to the concessions as much to get as many beers and hot dogs. Donnie, what are you loving this week?
I'm all about the simple things. And this week, it's my favorite neighborhood bakery, Bread Room Bakery. Allison LeClaire, who's a friend of mine, makes this wonderful homemade bread in her house. It's based with sourdough, and she does this sesame ring.
You need to follow her Instagram so you can see pictures. Because it's very, it'll entice you to make an order pretty quickly.
Yeah, and she just started making baguettes a few weeks ago, and it's every time I pick up one of her baguettes, I feel like I'm in Paris. It's amazing. Anyways,
They have those amazing air pockets, and they're super crunchy. Get order.
Yes.
That's all. Advice we have. What I'm loving this week is the San Diego Zoo acquired 2 new giant pandas. I love pandas. I don't know why. They don't do much. They just sit there and they eat. But there's something just beautiful about this animal that seems to have no utility that draws so much attention. There's been some political dynamics between China and the United States in terms of importing pandas to zoos. On Fresno's Best, my other podcast that I host, I had Courtney McNulty on, and she talked about the bird show at the Fresno Zoo. If you've never been to that, it's an amazing show that they put on, I think, almost daily. And zoos are just amazing places, and we are so lucky. Speaking of raising sales taxes to support great things,
yes,
like that's one of the best things that we do in Fresno is the sales tax to support the Fresno Chaffee Zoo.
So libraries and zoos, public spaces,
yeah,
our
civic institutions are important. This has been Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom, and this podcast was recorded at Sun Stereo Warehouse in downtown Fresno. Audio editing and mixing was done by Jordan Maddox. Our lead image comes from Vaughn Ballinum, and our song comes from Stateless Rat.